today I was thinking about how Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, apapyamam devartante mrityu samsaravartaya. Krishna is talking about, if you don't attain him, apapyamam, it's not that you come away empty-handed. If you don't attain Krishna, you may say, so what? There's other things, there's other paths, there's other sights and sounds and places. Krishna's nice. Krishna's one among many possibilities. Krishna's one among many nice possibilities in my life. Or maybe not many nice possibilities, but I have a few nice prospects. So, if I don't get Krishna, is it really a great disaster? What do you think? Why? Are you just saying that? You don't get Krishna. What's the problem?
Life is wasted.
Everything
is meaningless.
Meaningless? Why do you have to have meaning? You have your body, you have your senses. What do you think that meaning?
Except for your mother.
Huh?
Except for birthday and so on.
You must have some good times. Maybe it's one of those special unfortunate ones. But going back to what you said, no meaning. Well, why do you have to have meaning? Is it really that crucial to you to have meaning? Why? You're relatively young, right? How old? 20? 20? Why meaning? Why not just be? What do you mean it doesn't work? Just be! Huh? Have you tried it? And so how was it? Why not? Just go with the flow. Things happen, you know? You just move with the cosmos. Like the seasons change. You just go with that. Why do you want something more? Empty. What were you expecting? Don't you have ambitions, things you want to achieve in this world? Who's going to get your share of the action? Where's your ambition? Where's your drive? It's like what nobody here is telling me. She went home to visit her parents and they complained, it's too cold. We'd rather that you be that wild and crazy than be this way. You know, parents telling me. I told her, then they're disqualified as parents. It's just unfortunate part of Kali Yuga. Parents have a nice daughter who wants to live a pure life. They tell her, you'd rather that you act wild and crazy. It's too calm, you can't handle this. Devotee, he's studying for his PhD in the UK, and he had very high grades, and so he was applying to do his PhD, and the professor interviewing him said, well, your grades are high, everything looks fantastic, but I just don't sense in you that you have the passion to succeed. You're just too tranquil. You're just too placid. I just don't feel that passion in you. But anyways, I'll give you some references. I'll see what your previous professors say. So she contacted the previous professors. They all said, oh, he's a great student. So I'm like, all right, I'm warning you. I've never seen anyone make it through to the end of their PhD studies without some kind of passion. So after a while, it became established that he was indeed a good student. So then this professor started giving him tips.
Yeah.
You've got to just come across that whatever you're researching is the greatest thing in the world. He was doing some research on some advanced esoteric internet technology, like 15 years ahead of time. So, you're telling me you've got to feel that it's this, there's nothing more important than this. That's how you get all the research money. So it's all about simply getting money and getting grants. So it's not how much you know, it's who are your drinking buddies. So, where's your passion to achieve? Give it up at the age of 28. You're gonna be a star.
She is a star. She's sitting in the room too. Yes, right.
Don't you want to make your mark in the world? What about you? Studying hard? Don't you want to achieve?
I just wanted to get my degree.
And then you go out and make your mark in the world, right?
I'm making a mark in this world is like a lightning in a lesson.
Hare Krishna song. Where's your gusto, your zest, your drive to get ahead?
You suck to roll out.
Oh, that's why you took up Krishna consciousness. Because you don't have any ability. You don't have any will to achieve in the material world. That's what I understand. Are you all like that? No? It's losers, huh? Anyone ever tell you that?
Losers,
loser. Huh? But who's winning? That's what I want to know. Who's winning in this world? An honest person admits I'm a loser. Birth after birth. So Krishna says, a propya mam navartante, mrityu samsaravarti. Upon not getting me, you will get something. You don't go away empty handed. You're never empty handed. There's always something there. So what do you get if you don't get Krishna? Mrityu samsaravarti. You get the path of repeated birth and death. Now try to feel that. Repeated birth and death. I was thinking about that today. Everyone can look forward to death, the experience of dying. Some of you have known someone who departed from this world. Whether a devotee or non-devotee, family member, whatever. So just as they've gone, we will also go. I don't know how many of you seriously think about that. I will have to cross over this bridge. How many of you think I'm that? Raise your hand. So, It's a very powerful reality. But just think, to go through it again and again and again and again and again. The way I was thinking about it was, okay, one time would be enough. One time. Get it right and don't go through it again. But again and again and again and again and again. That's what Krishna's talking about in Bhagavad Gita. A prapya manda vartha pateya do some sort of rapping. Then I began to realize how glorious bhakti is, how glorious Krishna consciousness is. You can actually make this your last death. That's quite an achievement. You can actually make this the last time. Otherwise, you live a temporary life uselessly and then die only to take birth and die again and again and again. One death leads to another death. Now that's what I call very foolish living. But the power of the material energy is so strong that we forget. You see, we need to understand that material life is all about forgetfulness. You don't need intoxication to help you forget. Forgetfulness is built in to the illusory energy. That's why you can't remember all the pain that you've gone through in previous deaths. Sometimes people accuse, what's the point in the cycle of repeated birth and death and karma if we can't remember our suffering from previous life? Now, you don't remember specifically, but it's there at the core of your being. That's why you can't just lose yourself in material enjoyment without taking intoxication. Because normally, something at the bottom of your memory tells you, this isn't going to last, this is too good to be true, it's not true. Something at the bottom of your consciousness lurks like that. Anxiety. So therefore you have to take intoxication to forget more. I wonder how many of you think about this stuff. All attempts to enjoy are laced with anxiety. That's why people take intoxication. You get rid of that inherent anxiety. That nagging thought while you're trying to enjoy it. This isn't going to last. I wonder what problems are going to happen now. You want to get rid of that. And therefore you take intoxication. Which is the mode of ignorance. Because material life is already based on forgetfulness. You don't need to increase it. Now, why is it that you don't remember your specific miseries of the past life? That is Krishna's mercy on you. Because if you remembered the specifics, all the specifics of what you went through in previous births, you would not feel motivated to fulfill your material desires. And fulfilling your material desires is why you're in this world. So to allow you to have your cake, to allow you to fulfill your material desires, Krishna helps you in your program, in your mission. He causes you to forget your previous death. Otherwise, if you remembered your previous death, you couldn't pursue your material desires properly. And you are so stubbornly attached to fulfilling your material desires. Of course, even looking at this life, you don't remember your birth. It's like yesterday we celebrated Patrick's birthday. He's not here. But he doesn't remember being born. Did any of you remember popping out of the womb? Any of you? But even in this life, you don't remember crucial events. Haven't you had an experience in your non-Krishna conscious life that was very painful. You were exploited, you were abused, or you were hurt very badly, physically or emotionally, and you just wanted to forget it. And that, yes, you want to forget it, so you can go on, get on with your life. Someone who you thought was very dear to you hurt you, and so you just want to get that person out of your life, get that person out of your mind. Maybe even pray to God, please help me forget that person. You might have even told someone, I wish I'd never met you. You ever tell that to anyone? I wish I'd never met you. There are many ladies who say things like that. Meaning, I wish I could just forget you. I wish I could just forget that you ever walked this earth. So, you can see forgetfulness is a very powerful thing, and we do call upon it to assist us in our material march forward. But you actually can't forget unless Krishna helps you. That's why the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, from me all the knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness comes. So, I'm trying to get you to understand that an essential part of material life is forgetting. You want to forget anything that gets in the way of your attempts for material pleasure. I even know some devotees, they lost their way in Krishna consciousness due to offenses, and they dropped their spiritual practices. They paid lots of money to go to a so-called top psychologist in the USA. And the mission they gave him, this group of ex-devotees, please help us to forget Krishna. Pay him big money. That's how hard they had to work to get Krishna out of their mind. They had to pay big money to the psychologist. Please use some modern scientific techniques so we can forget Krishna. And what did they say to them? It didn't work. As fallen as they were, they couldn't get Krishna out of their mind. So the point is, we want to forget so that we can try to enjoy. We want to forget for bad times. Do any of you want to remember bad times? No, because you feel that remembering the bad times impede your enjoyment. How many of you get together with your friends and family and say, let's think about the bad times? And did you do that? Let's reminisce about the bad times. So now, what are we going to do? How serious are we about Krishna consciousness? And why? You all can be doing so much in the material world, or so people will tell many of you. I remember when one of my relatives that sent me a message, you know, this could have been you. You could have been up there too. You could have been up there too easily. A few years later, that same brother came to me with tears in his eyes after a few years. He had his own clinic, 150 persons working under him. Came to me with tears in his eyes. The routine, I can't take it anymore. How did you avoid it? I said, really, brother, I thought you were up there. Then I had another cousin, a cousin, he was a big, for 30 years he was a top ranked in the health department in Washington, D.C. He was like a big overseer. He was in charge of birth certificates and death certificates for the whole city. High administrative post in charge of the Department of Records for Washington, D.C. So he kept his job for 30 years. And then he retired last year, early, at the age of 56. So I asked him, looking back, what is your realization? 30 years in the Department of Health, Washington, D.C., high position. What is your realization looking back? He said, looking back, I just don't know how I got so sucked in to this work culture of just more. You can't get out of it. He said. Looking back, I just think it wasn't worth it. But you can't get out of it. He explained the way the mentality is. You want to be known at your workplace as a person who can get the job done when others can't. And it's part of the culture that if there's some problem at work, if there's some need, you put yourself forward because you want to be known as, you know, the person who, everything else fails, you'll get the job done. And that looks really good on your record. So this goes on year after year after year. You just keep on wanting to look good. You can't get out of that. You can't get off of that treadmill. It's just an ingrained, inherent part of the work culture, the office culture. And once you get that reputation, you don't want to lose it. All you have to do is hear one time, so-and-so. You can always count on him. And and you get a little increase, modest increase in salary. And you just can't forget that. Wow, I see the way upwards. Yes. And so you stay on that treadmill for 3 decades. And it is kind of gratifying to your false ego to be known as competent person, competent administrator manager. So I asked them. So what is your realization? 30 years being on top. It just wasn't worth it, but you can't get out of it at the time. So you might say, oh, it's very good. At least at 56, he had his realizations. Now that he retired early. But then a few months later, he wrote me and said, you know, I've been home now for 4 months, retired. I just can't handle it anymore. It's just too boring. I gotta get into something now. I think I'll start my own business or I'll do something. It's as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Nahikashtichanamapi, Zapatishtikamapi. You can't just sit around and do nothing. You have to act. You're driven by the modes of nature. So he couldn't just retire at home and in tranquility. No, the motive of passion infected him. He had to do something. So think about yourself. What is it you're trying to do with your life? We're here for such a short time, and we make so many complications for ourselves. You understand? Here for such a short time. How do we get the clarity of vision to keep our life simple? This is an essential point for every devotee to understand. How to get the clarity of life to keep your lifestyle simple. That clarity comes from the Hare Krishna mantra. Anyone who sincerely tries to chant Hare Krishna as their main priority in life will always have a simple life. Because it's not possible to focus with attention on the Hare Krishna mantra and then get into complications. The Maha Mantra is all attractive because the Maha Mantra is Krishna. That's why you feel like, oh, this chanting is just like taking over my life. And yes. Krishna is impossible to ignore because he's unlimitedly beautiful. The first sign that Krishna is strong in your life is when you're always thinking about your chanting. Oh, I just can't chant well enough. Oh, when will I be able to hear every syllable? That kind of longing means that Krishna is becoming more present for you. Otherwise, you wouldn't think like this. You wouldn't care. But the fact that you're always thinking, how to improve my chanting, how to give more to my chanting, or even, oh, my chanting, I still like it, but it's just not happening as well as I'd like it to happen. All that shows that you care. And Krishna is interested in that. Krishna is a person. Aren't you interested in your various relationships that someone shows they care for you? Maybe some of you have even said like that. Just show me you care. How many of you said something like that? Just show me you care. Never mind that. Often the person has no qualification to care. Still, you just want to show me you care. I remember where I was in the movie. One movie where some elderly man was desperate for romantic love. So he just paid some lady some money and said, just pretend you love me. Just pretend you love me. It shows, well, it's the crying need. If you can't find someone who really cares for you or needs you, find someone who pretend. This is how desperate the conditioned soul is to be needed. This is something we have to face in ourselves. How much of our activities, whether in Krishna consciousness or not, are based on just wanting to feel needed? Wanting to feel cared for. Now, in Krishna consciousness, we're trying to be honest because we're developing the qualification to actually care for others. But without developing the qualification, it's cheating to care for others. Because you don't know what to do. You're not a qualified spiritual doctor. We have this longing that we want to be needed. We want to be cared for. That means we should associate with those who actually have the ability to show proper care. Not that you're like a bleeding heart. Need me. Care for me. But I see sometimes persons get so desperate, that's basically what they're like. You're not going to make sounds like that baby there. Mm. But still, you want to need care. Ladies are quite upfront about it. Men generally keep it hidden. They just get grumpy and grouchy. Ladies just, you know, throw a temper tantrum or something, or scream or yell, or throw something at you. You know, so ladies are good for throwing things. How many of you done that? Throw something. Yeah, it's the ladies' thing, you know. It totally bewilders men, you know. Men don't throw things. The ladies, they just pick up something and throw it. Just show me you care. I don't think you care. And the man's totally baffled, you know. I'm giving you all my money. What do you want? I sacrificed 30 whole minutes to listen to you instead of being on the computer. Well, of course, the men also have that, but they don't admit it. They want to be immediately cared for. Mm. They want their wounds massaged. They're not really fighting the world. But they don't want to admit. So everyone's carrying around all this baggage. I want to be needed. I want to be cared for. Or even I want to care for someone. If we're truly serious about resolving all our issues, we've got to deal with the Krishna conscious reality of our life. Without Krishna consciousness, we're not qualified to care for anyone or help anyone. You just present yourself as an imposter. Yeah, I can care for you. Yeah. I can take care of you. Don't worry. You're going to be alright. I understand. It's not true. And after a while, what happens? Everyone, no matter what kind of relationship they're in, they begin to understand that no one understands. Isn't that a very powerful moment of despair when you realize no one really understands? We're speaking materially, of course. Has that ever hit any of you in your material life? All of a sudden you realize, no one understands me. In fact, no one understands anything. Ever hit you like that? I think this kind of probably hits men more than ladies, yes. No one understands. The world doesn't understand. No one knows what they're talking about. The scientists don't know what they're talking about. Scholars don't know what they're talking about. Politicians don't know what they're talking about. So now the question is, what do you do with your life? Do you have the honesty to make a plan for the remaining duration of your life? Or are we so overwhelmed by existence in terms of our thinking, I've got so much time ahead of me, I just can't plan things. There's such a big expanse of time remaining in my life. And do you feel like that? I plan out my life. I mean, it's a huge amount of time ahead of me. Got so much time. No, very little time. Well, the sooner you understand the need to make Krishna consciousness the top priority in your life, the sooner sanity can reign in your life, and then you can help others to be sane. Plus, everyone is completely crazy. Each other knows. Sometimes it's well packaged, sometimes it isn't. Of course, completely crazy. It is a big ball of issues.
I want to need. I want to be needed. You don't need me as much as I want you to need me.
Have you ever gone through all these complications? Trying to make it real compared to what? You sit down and, okay, let's really talk it out. I mean, let's have a face-to-face discussion. Let's just bear all the issues. Now, when I feel this way, I want you to feel that way. And you just go on and on and on. I'm like, and at the end you think, yeah, I think we've resolved this. I think we've worked it out. But it's not so. But you say that, and so there's always this deep feeling in the core of your heart that I'm really not connecting with anyone at all. Even the person who's supposed to be so dear to me, that I'm really not connecting. At first I thought there was a connection. Especially if there was romance, it was like, wow. But then that was a couple of years ago, and now I know. All the novelties worn off, and you know, stuck with this person. Make sure you try to make it work. I just don't feel that connection anymore. When you reach your middle ages, that's when often midlife crisis hits you. What South African devotees in New Zealand have, his parents went through a midlife crisis. If his father thought everything's all right, you know, got a wife, got a job, got three kids, I do my job, I come home, yeah, support the family, and then one day out of the clear, his wife just said, "I want a divorce." He had no forewarning. In fact, statistics show that, at least in the USA, surveys have been done, in which it says that 65 to 70% of men who are involved in divorce never had any idea that the wife was dissatisfied. 65 to 70%. They were just shocked. You want a divorce? Why? Oh, after all, I've been over the years fixing the car, painting the house. What do you want out of me? 65 to 70% of men are just shocked. They had no idea that the relationship was in trouble. And then what does the ex-wife-to-be usually respond with? You didn't know, Jesse. That's the proof. That's the proof. That there should be a divorce. You didn't even know there was a problem. That's why I wanted a divorce. So this man, he was totally devastated. He's, you know, pushing 50, and what was he thinking? What am I going to do? I'm too old to find another partner. You know, he had his steady sense gratification at home, and now he's all of a sudden thrust back into the competitive field, you know? I mean, he was really, he told me, he was thinking like this. You know, I was married for 25, 30 years, and, you know, what am I going to do now? Where am I? Who am I? I just can't just start another relationship, you know. I thought that was it. I thought I had my steady, you know, my steady thing at home, you know. Now it's all gone. This is a midlife crisis. It hits the ladies, especially. The ladies start wondering when they're in their mid-40s. Wait a minute, I've just given my whole life to others, to my kids, to my husband. What about me? And they just suddenly drop their family life and just leave it. Of course, it's not just when you reach 45 that these crises are there. Throughout life, unless you take intoxication, unless you just absorb yourself in working to make money, you will have these moments where you just can't avoid thinking, what is the reality of it all? That's why we are not in favor of this present type of civilization because it keeps people from thinking. They can't have those moments because they're kept so busy between work, 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 buying, 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 and intoxication. They don't have any time for contemplation or reflection. When they feel bad because of work, they go to get intoxicated or go shopping, retail therapy. And after you get intoxicated or you shop, then you gotta work. And after you work, then you gotta get intoxicated and shop. And this way it goes on and on and on. It's better in Krishna consciousness that we face these inner issues. Understand they're there. The desire to love and be loved, to care for others and be cared for. We face that. There's nothing wrong with those desires in a Krishna conscious context. Therefore, what do? In bhakti, we care for devotees. We serve devotees. That produces such a cleansing effect on your inner self. That, if done with the selfless motive, does wonders for cleansing the heart and resolving all knotty issues in your heart. If you just serve devotees, care for devotees. Care for devotees so much that you want everyone to be a devotee and you won't even go out and take a risk approaching those who are not Krishna conscious because you want them to be a devotee so you can serve them. Just like at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, this message, Arjuna, that I have spoken to you cannot be repeated to anyone who is neither austere or who's not a devotee or who's envious. So that means don't say Bhagavad Gita to anyone if you don't understand what Krishna means. Who is austere today? Who's a devotee? Who's not envious of Krishna? So Krishna said that, Arjuna, this message of mine may not be repeated to anyone who is lacking austerity, who's envious, or who's not a devotee. So what are we doing then? Spreading, teaching, distributing Krishna consciousness to others. But the devotee knows. Krishna says, don't speak about him to these unqualified people. So let me make these people qualified. Then they'll be able to hear about Krishna. Let me increase the devotional training so that more people will have a chance to hear about Krishna and understand Krishna. So my point is, so many emotional issues in our heart can be resolved through selfless service to the devotees. But it has to be selfless service. If you use service in Krishna consciousness to, for self-aggrandizement, to bolster your material ego, you'll perpetuate the problems that have grown inside you. But if you, with a selfless motive, if you just preach and care for devotees simply to satisfy your spiritual master and Krishna, so many emotional issues can be resolved through the selfless process of service to the devotees and service to the future devotees. You have to put your heart into it and be willing to stick it out through thick and thin. Don't expect that all devotees are always going to understand you. Now, all devotees, to varying degrees, they're recuperating in Krishna service, some more than others. So, sometimes you'll be misunderstood, even if, when you're acting in your most sincere way. sometimes can really frustrate devotees to the point of even making them consider giving up their Krishna consciousness. I was being completely sincere this time. Now, I know sometimes I can really be a bit off and selfish, but this time I've been completely sincere and selfless, and no one understood. Wait till that happens. Then you see the boys separated from the men, the girls from the ladies. Sometimes even the person gets very angry at Krishna. I mean, this time I was giving my all in all. I was selfless, I was sincere, and look what happened. So if you want to become valuable in Krishna's eyes, you have to learn how to survive being misunderstood, even in Krishna consciousness. You have to know how to stand by your devotional service through thick and thin. And Krishna will reward you for that. There's always challenges, there are always tests in spiritual life. How much are you really attached to chanting the holy name in devotional service? How much is it the most valuable thing for you? By associating with the bhakti yoga process, you have the chance to make devotional service and the Maha Mantra, the chanting of Hare Krishna, the most valuable thing in your life, so that you'll cling to it no matter what. Then you know you're making spiritual progress. Now getting back to the point that was made by one of you. Meaning. I wanted meaning in my life. But what do you want? What did you want your life to mean? What did you want your life to mean? You don't understand that meaning. What do you want your life to mean? Is it really necessary that life has to have meaning for you to be happy and satisfied? What? Can you just be?
But that's when it can be, when it is meaning.
Why can't you just, you know, go with the flow? Follow your senses?
Water, you know, it's just rocks and splashing and hitting and gritting and agonizing.
Oh, you never had any good times.
And then you land splat.
You Hare Krishnas, make it all sound so negative. You had some good times, right? Yeah. Some magic moments, right? Like what? Tell us about it.
Would you like to know?
Time of the music. Wow, this is it.
Yeah.
We got it. How long did it last?
3 years.
3 years? Yeah, every day?
When I walked through that gate, I remember when I was 19, and I was about 20, and I dropped to my knees, and I thought, this is it. This is the feeling I want. That's one of them. That's for me.
No, I'm talking about, that's true, but I'm talking about, you know, material.
Like, oh, that's why I asked if you wanted to know.
Can you have some flickering moments?
Yeah.
Where you can see what made material life worth it?
Yeah.
I don't mind taking a repeated birth and death as long as I have a moment like this. And then what happened?
I lost.
You lost, right?
I was a martial artist. I lost one fight and I gave it up.
And you thought you were going to be undefeated?
Undefeated.
How long was you undefeated?
Couple of fights.
What crazy idea you want to get into?
Yeah, I wanted to.
Because
I was determined, very determined. Every day, determined. It's like Rocky Balboa.
Affirmations.
Yeah.
You cited affirmations. I am indefeatable. I am incomparable. You should chant those mantras.
Oh, goodness, good idea.
So, just two fights and you fought.
It was, it's the feeling that they gave me. I felt completely unstoppable. Not because I beat someone to a pulp or anything. But it felt really good. I thought, wow, it's just off to turn the temple. And it felt good. It felt like, whew, I've never felt like that before. I felt nothing. I was unstoppable. Nothing could stop me. I was just in my own little world and the medicine.
Remember that mantra in Bhagavad Gita? Ishvaraham Bhodhi Siddharam Bhagavan. I am the controller. I am the enjoyer.
Yeah.
I am perfect, powerful, and happy. Mm. You felt that surge,
yeah? Yeah, I did. Definitely. When it was roaring in the crowd.
How many were in the crowd?
Quite a few.
Hundreds. How many hundreds?
Oh, I said average about 500. It's amazing. Oh, my family, my friends, people don't even know me.
Accomplishments.
The girls, right?
Oh. I'll be honest. Be honest. But I had good reasons for it, but it was just the feeling that day of my first fight, winning it, with my sensei jumping up and putting his arms and throwing me up and a smile on his face. It was just very much, it was rewarding for me. It was, it felt good, but it didn't last very long.
Okay, and how long later was the next fight?
A couple of months, prepared for another fight. Won that one.
And then what happened? What was the action? Number two, you fought number two.
Yeah, same feeling. Actually, no, it wasn't. I kind of took it for granted, definitely. I felt very, I didn't feel that the person I was fighting this was competent for me, for my, you know what I mean? Because like, I was dancing around him and he wouldn't hit me. And I was like, in my mind, I was like, what's going on here? Is this guy playing around with me? Or maybe it's a bluff, pulling bluff or something, so I don't look and he hits me. But yeah, I took it for granted completely. It was unsatisfying. And directly after that, I went to my sister and said, when's my next fight, you know? Get into a puppy and get all mentally prepared. So when I do win, it's like, yeah! Like, so what was that all about? Like,
the crowd was there, the girls were there.
My girlfriend was there, yeah.
And you got me.
Yeah, I was like, I was the man of the hour, and my girlfriend was like, you're my man. You met Rusty yesterday, same person.
Yeah. So,
pats in the back.
And then you lost.
They were fearing you in the town.
And
hate that. No, I live in Tel Aviv. People didn't know me.
And then you lost.
And then, yeah, very much so.
How do you know you lost while you were fighting or at the end?
Even before it started. Before the day even happened. I mean, I remember I had a week before, my sensei said, you fucked me up, and I wasn't even in the dojo anymore. I was actually kicked out of the dojo.
Why?
Clashing, verbal clashes. I suppose I thought I knew better at one stage. Yeah.
With your teacher?
And I wasn't very humble. I thought I knew better about two things. With my teacher, yeah. I mean, to me, it's almost a different concept, but it's also the sensei is your guru. He teaches you, and you pay a basis. You walk in, there's a bow and respect, and so forth.
You didn't offer your basis
one day.
You didn't offer your basis.
No, no, it was good. It's just my attitude got a little bit much, very, very much so. Yeah. My mind, this whole set for martial arts is very much for the art of it. But then I lost contact with devotees and the whole thing, and I became very, the art was still there, but I was feeling very proud because I was accomplishing things. And
he
throwing me and told me to come back again. And there was a lot of tears and emotions, and he said, well, anyway, this is a fight in a week's time, so And I was going to fight someone who was way more experienced than me, who was going to beat Highland how many times, and he thought I was ready, and I wasn't. And finally, got in the ring, I knew I was going to lose. I didn't get hurt, I lost 2 points. But yeah, I held back a lot, I was very scared. I just didn't want to get damaged by this person.
So after, what was the end like?
I just didn't want to see anyone depressed.
Where's your girlfriend telling you?
Sorry. I still love you.
That's what the ladies are for. Yeah. That's what they want. And they don't ask for it, so that's what they really want. You know? That's what they want, you to patch them up emotionally, even though they don't think they have emotions. So, that was your moment in the sun.
Yeah, well, definitely. It felt like it. Definitely. I just would have been nice if I said to a friend of mine, you know, if I could apply this feeling, being in the ring itself, it's a different world. No one else exists. Nothing exists between you and your opponent. Completely different world. And if I could have this, make this feeling last, of being conscious all the time in my life, there's no time to slip up. Otherwise, you're going to get smacked. And if I could apply the Krishna consciousness, I would have been so far in the Krishna consciousness.
Okay. You can do that. Yes, you can do that. He's brought up a very good point. A lot of you have tried very hard for things in material life. You've made sacrifices. You've endeavored. Now, you've got to try at least as hard in Krishna consciousness as you did in material life. Otherwise, you're not being honest to Krishna. So many of you have really struggled to achieve something, to get something. So many of you have tolerated hardships and inconveniences, whether in relationships or with parents or whatever. You've got to put that same striving that you've done for Maya, you've got to put that into devotional service, otherwise you're holding back. You're not giving Krishna your own love. You've got to give at least that much to Krishna. Better, more, but at least give Krishna the effort that you endeavored with in the material world. It's a very important point. That is a major reason why we don't want our centers to become clubs of lazy, irresponsible fellows. However you labored for your material goals, you've got to at least do that for Krishna, that much intensity. And then you're being honest. Otherwise, all these unresolved issues rattling around in your head and heart will just be there. But through the fire of sacrifice and devotional service, these issues can go. So that's what we should be looking for, a fire of sacrifice to burn away those impurities. We were speaking last night about demands. It's not that Krishna is the only one who makes demands. Material life makes its demands. It's like the child was crying and mother had to leave. The child was demanding. So, material life is full of those kind of things. Why is it that we resent Krishna when Krishna makes his demand of love? These are things to think about. Just like you said, if I would just apply that concentration to Krishna consciousness. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, apropyamam nivartante, ritu samsara. Okay, you say, if I don't get you, Krishna, big deal. You're just one of a few things in my life. If you don't get Krishna, apropyamam, you do get something. You don't go away empty handed. You get ritu samsara, the path of repeated birth and death. Death is the most formidable thing in existence. Materialism. Why go through it more than one time? So, Krishna consciousness gives you the ability to just die one more time in perfection. Why in the world do we want to repeat death after death after death? To go through the whole death experience only to be put in a situation where you're going to die again and again and again. Why not just die properly one time and end it all? And my father was telling me, he was watching the death of his father-in-law. So, he was saying, I don't want to go like that at all. That was really slow and agonizing. No, no. When I get that way, just put me out. Just finish me off. They actually think that's the end of the dying problem. Just finish me off. I'm sure you've all read about people dying peacefully in their sleep. Now, no one dies peacefully in their sleep. You just don't see the subtle realities going on internally inside them. So Krishna consciousness is the most real thing. It's the most practical thing. Die to live. Don't die to die. One time is enough. That's the Krishna consciousness. Go back to God in this lifetime. One more death. That's it. And even that death experience is different for the devotee and the non-devotee. The famous example given. The cat holds both the mouse and the kitten in its mouth. So from the external point of view, it looks like it's the same thing when the cat holds the kitten in its mouth or when the cat holds the mouse in its mouth. But no, the qualitative experience is completely different. What is the kitten feeling in the mouth of its mother? It's feeling love. What is the mouse feeling in the mouth of the cat? Terror. But from the external point of view, it looks the same. But from the experience of the creature that's in the cat's mouth, everything is different according to whether it's the kitten or it's the mouse. So similarly, from the external point of view, it looks like both the devotee and the non-devotee die. From the biological point of view, that's true. But from the spiritual point of view, of consciousness, completely different experiences. So once again, let us remember the ability of the children to cause you to forget. Get used to it, that's the way Maya is. It's an energy that inspires forgetfulness. Learn how to get around that. Learn how to cope with that by filling your life with opportunities for remembering Krishna, for remembering Krishna's service. That's the smart thing to do. You're living in an atmosphere of forgetfulness. You have a responsibility to surround yourself with techniques and opportunities for remembering Krishna. That's your responsibility. And when you take that responsibility, that's the first sign showing that you're on the path of true love. When you make that extra step to fill your life with techniques and opportunities for remembering Krishna, amidst this ocean of forgetfulness, known as the material world. It's like Gauri's holding her child. That child has just been born. How long ago? 3 months ago. But that child will not remember what it's like being born. You remember what it's like giving birth, right? The child doesn't remember what it's like being born. Why? because the experience of being born is so painful. That child doesn't remember being in your womb in such an uncomfortable position. It's too terrifying to remember that kind of thing. You won't be able to fulfill your material desires. So Krishna lets you forget. Now you may say, well, wouldn't it be better if Krishna let me remember what it's like in the womb and then I wouldn't want to fulfill my material desires? But that is not enough to cause you to become purified of your material desires. The only way you get rid of your material desires is by absorption in devotional service. So therefore Krishna mercifully says, okay, you got material desires. I'll remind you of them, because you forget your material desires in the previous life. The super soul will remind you. Remember you wanted this? I don't advise it, but you want it. So as you were saying, this whole material world is meant for rectification and purification. It's amazing how we don't see it that way. We see this world as meant for our pleasure. There's something in this world for me. I'm going to get it one day. You have that feeling? My place in the sun is there somewhere, somehow. There's hope for me. I will get what I want. I will have comfort. I will have my own meaning. I'll have my own meaning. Just something like that. You ever thought like that? I'll generate my own meaning. That? Of course, such foolishness cannot last long for material nature. Crashes up. But please remember this inherent nature of material energy to cause forgetfulness. Remember our responsibility to fill our life with techniques and opportunities for remembering Krishna so we don't become ruined, compromised by the forgetfulness atmosphere of the avijja potency, the nation's potency. Krishna consciousness is for real. You look at your mind, look at your senses, and you think, how are they going to engage in the Lord's service? That's not difficult. What makes it difficult? What makes it difficult?
Well, sometimes it's just straight through me. The same way.
The gross sense.
Hmm?
The gross sense.
What do you mean?
Just a gross sense.
How many make it difficult? Three Christian men?
Maybe.
Hmm?
They can.
How?
The duality of materialism.
I'm reading the books. Very good. How much did you read today? Wow, geez, that's true. But let's just pursue this point. How do the gross senses make it hard for you? Why don't you just engage the gross senses in Krishna service? Then those same gross senses that you think are problematic, they'll actually do the greatest good.
So probably one of our biggest problems is our reluctance to give up sense gratification.
It will give you up anyway. Sense gratification will give you up. It next time you go to the dentist or the doctor and you have to get some surgery or something serious done to you, while the dentist or doctor is operating on you, then think about sense gratification. Try it. Oh, this body is so nice. Oh. Even with just the dentist drilling your teeth, think about material going to them. Try it. It is possible to control the senses and use them for the highest good. You simply have to work hard in investing your senses in devotional service. It's a career. It's not something you do and then graduate from that. No, eternally you're investing your senses in Krishna service. So that is your mission, to invest your senses in Krishna service. If you stick to that determination, your life will become successful. And you should want your life to be successful. And we want that all your lives are successful. We want you to be fulfilled. That is only possible in Krishna consciousness.
Isn't it that fulfillment that will give your life meaning? That fulfillment will bring meaning into your life.
Yes, when you see that you have spiritual senses that can be spiritually fulfilled by trying to please Krishna senses, that is the real meaning of life. Krishna has spiritual senses, but my senses are meant to satisfy Krishna senses. You see, in Bhakti Yoga, we're not against sense gratification. We're simply pointing out whose senses should be gratified. We're not against sense gratification. We are all for Krishna's sense gratification. This center here is meant for organizing the gratification of Krishna's senses. That's the purpose of this building here. Alright, this demonstrative praise.